Before we begin today's episode, I want to let you know that this entire discussion is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. This episode is brought to you by Readwell Smart Bookmarks, the fictional device that supposedly tracks your reading progress with neural sensors. Completely made up, so don't go looking for it. Please keep in mind that some details we discuss may be inaccurate, so double-check anything important to you. I'm Sarah. And today we're exploring Deborah Eisenberg's 2018 collection, Your Duck is My Duck, her first book of stories in over a decade. With me is Michael Chen, literary critic and author of The Art of the Contemporary Short Story.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. This collection really showcases why Eisenberg is considered one of our finest living short story writers.
For listeners unfamiliar with her work, Eisenberg has this remarkable ability to capture characters who are slightly adrift, often finding themselves in situations they don't quite understand. What drew you to this particular collection?
What's striking about Your Duck is My Duck is how it feels both timeless and urgently contemporary. These are stories about displacement, about people navigating a world that feels increasingly unstable.
The collection spans different settings and time periods, but there's this consistent thread of characters who are somehow out of place, whether it's literally being in a foreign country or just feeling alienated in their own lives.
Exactly. Take the title story, which follows a woman staying at an artist colony. She's supposedly there to work on her art, but she's really just observing this strange social ecosystem around her.
That story is fascinating because the narrator is so passive, almost anthropological in her observations. She's watching these wealthy patrons and other artists, but never quite engaging.
And that passivity is quintessentially Eisenberg. Her protagonists are often watchers rather than actors, which creates this wonderful tension between internal complexity and external inaction.
Stories in this collection range from a few pages to much longer pieces. Some feel almost like novellas. How does Eisenberg handle this variation in scope?
She's incredibly attuned to what each story needs. The shorter pieces tend to capture single moments of realization or confusion, while the longer ones let her develop these complex social situations.
Before we dive deeper, should we talk about what kind of reader this collection appeals to? These aren't conventional plot-driven stories.
If you're looking for clear resolutions or dramatic plot twists, you might be frustrated. But if you're interested in psychological realism and beautiful, precise language, this is extraordinary work.
The stories often end not with resolution, but with a kind of deepening understanding or sometimes just a deepening mystery. It's very much literary fiction in the best sense.
And there's this underlying political consciousness throughout. These aren't explicitly political stories, but they're deeply aware of power dynamics, economic inequality, and social displacement.
Let's talk about the worlds these stories create. Many of them involve travel or temporary living situations. What does this mobility add to the collection?
The constant movement mirrors the emotional states of the characters. They're physically displaced, which amplifies their psychological displacement. It's never just tourism or adventure.
In Merge, we have this family dealing with the aftermath of some kind of economic or political crisis. The world feels slightly shifted from our own reality.
That story is particularly interesting because Eisenberg never fully explains what's happened. We piece together that there's been some kind of collapse, but the focus is on how ordinary people navigate the aftermath.
The family in that story is staying with relatives, and there's this constant tension about resources, about who owes what to whom. It feels very relevant to our current moment.
And the children in that story are so beautifully drawn. They're processing this upheaval in ways the adults can barely comprehend, let alone help with.
Eisenberg has this gift for writing children who feel genuinely young but not simplified. They have their own complex inner lives that sometimes seem clearer than the adults.
The physical spaces in these stories are crucial too, whether it's the artist colony or someone's temporary apartment or a family home that no longer feels secure. Place shapes everything.
There's often this sense that characters are inhabiting spaces that don't quite belong to them. even when they're supposed to be welcome, there's an underlying tension.
Cross Off and Move On takes place in Central America, and the American protagonist is constantly aware of being an outsider, but also of her own privilege and complicity.
That's one of the longer stories, and it really develops this complex relationship between the narrator and the place she's visiting. It's not simple exploitation or simple appreciation.
Berg avoids both the naive tourist perspective and the overly guilty liberal perspective. Her narrator is trying to see clearly, but she's also aware of the limitations of her vision.
The pacing in these stories is distinctive. Things unfold slowly, almost meditatively. How does that serve the material?
It mirrors how we actually experience confusion or displacement. You don't immediately understand what's happening to you. The slow revelation matches the character's own process of understanding.
And it allows for these beautiful passages of observation and reflection. Eisenberg can spend a paragraph on something as simple as the light in a room, and it becomes profound.
Narrative structure often involves these spiraling thoughts. A character will start with one observation and it leads to a memory, which leads to another realization. And gradually we understand their situation.
Let's focus on the characters themselves. Who are these people Eisenberg writes about?
They're often educated, middle-class Americans, but they're in situations where their usual frameworks don't apply. Their education and privilege don't protect them from confusion or loss.
In the title story, the narrator is an artist, but we never really see her making art. She's more concerned with navigating the social situation she's found herself in.
That's such a key point. The identity she thought she had, artist, becomes almost irrelevant in this new context. She's reduced to just being a person trying to understand what's expected of her.
And there's this wealthy couple, Krista and Anders, who are the patrons of this artist colony. They're generous, but also somehow sinister, though you can't put your finger on why.
Eisenberg is brilliant at creating these characters who are perfectly pleasant on the surface, but somehow unsettling. It's not that they're evil, but their privilege creates this distorting field around them.
The narrator keeps trying to figure out what's really going on with these people, but she's always slightly outside their world. There's information she's not privy to.
That mirrors the reader's experience, too. We're getting this filtered perspective. So we're as confused and curious as the narrator is.
What about the way characters relate to each other? There's often the sense of people talking past each other.
Yes, communication is constantly breaking down, but not in dramatic ways. People are polite. They're trying to connect. But there are these invisible barriers.
In Merge, the family members are dealing with their crisis in completely different ways. The parents are trying to maintain normalcy, while the children are more adaptable, but also more vulnerable.
That story really captures how families fracture under pressure. Everyone's trying to be considerate, but they're also protecting themselves. And those two impulses don't always align.
The teenage daughter in that story is particularly well drawn. She's old enough to understand that something serious has happened, but not old enough to have any control over it.
And she's dealing with normal teenage concerns at the same time. Eisenberg doesn't make her preternaturally wise or completely naive. She's just a real teenager in an abnormal situation.
The adults in these stories are often failing in various ways. Not dramatically, but through the small acts of selfishness or blindness.
They're very human failures. People trying to do right, but limited by their own perspectives and needs. There's compassion in how Eisenberg depicts these limitations.
Cross Off and Move On, the narrator is trying to be a good person, trying to understand the political situation around her, but she's also somewhat self-absorbed.
That story is fascinating because it's about the impossibility of being truly altruistic when you're also trying to figure out your own life. She wants to help, but she also wants to feel good about herself.
And there are these local characters who remain somewhat mysterious to her, which I think is realistic. She can't fully understand their motivations or situations.
Eisenberg resists the temptation to make everything comprehensible to her American protagonist. Some things remain opaque, which feels honest.
What about romantic relationships in these stories? They seem fraught in particular ways.
Romance often serves as another site of miscommunication. People want connection, but they're bringing different needs and expectations that they can't quite articulate.
There's often this sense that characters are performing intimacy rather than actually achieving it. They go through the motions, but something essential is missing.
And that connects to the broader theme of displacement. If you don't understand your own situation, how can you genuinely connect with someone else?
Let's talk about the themes that run through this collection. What is Eisenberg really exploring here?
At its core, this is about the anxiety of not knowing your place in the world. Economic, political, and social changes have left people unmoored.
There's definitely a post-2008 feeling to many of these stories. People who thought they understood the rules discovering that the rules have changed.
But it's not just economic crisis. It's also about aging, about relationships shifting, about the world becoming more complex and harder to navigate.
The title, Your Duck is My Duck, comes from a moment in the title story where the narrator is trying to understand some kind of philosophical or artistic concept. What does that phrase capture?
It's about the impossibility of shared understanding. What seems obvious or meaningful to you might be completely different for me, even when we're looking at the same thing.
And yet the characters keep trying to connect, keep trying to understand each other. There's something poignant about that persistence in the face of constant miscommunication.
Exactly. The effort matters even when it fails. These aren't cynical stories, despite their awareness of human limitations.
There's also this recurring motif of observation. Characters are constantly watching other people, trying to decode social situations.
It's almost anthropological. People studying each other like they're from different species, which in a way they are. Class, nationality, generation, these create real barriers.
And art appears throughout the collection, not just in the title story. Characters are often artists or interested in art but struggling to create or understand it.
Art becomes a metaphor for the attempt to make meaning out of experience. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But the attempt is what matters.
The political dimension of these stories is subtle but persistent. How does Eisenberg handle politics without being heavy-handed?
She focuses on how large political forces affect individual lives rather than making explicit political arguments. The personal is political, in the best sense of that phrase.
In Merge, we never get a full explanation of what kind of crisis has occurred, but we see how it's disrupted this family's basic assumptions about their life.
And in the Central America story, there are hints about American foreign policy and economic influence, but always filtered through personal experience.
There's also this theme of privilege and its discomforts. Characters who have advantages but feel guilty or confused about them.
The artist colony story is particularly good on this. The narrator is benefiting from this wealthy couple's generosity, but she's also aware that something isn't quite right about the whole setup.
It's not simple guilt, though. It's more like a recognition that privilege creates its own kind of blindness, its own isolation.
And Eisenberg doesn't offer easy solutions. She's more interested in capturing the complexity of these moral positions than in resolving them.
Time works in interesting ways in these stories. Past and present often blend together in characters' minds.
Marie intrudes on the present constantly. Characters are always being reminded of previous experiences that may or may not be relevant to their current situation.
It creates this layered quality where every moment contains multiple moments. The present is always in dialogue with the past.
And it reflects how we actually think and experience life. We're never just in the present moment. We're always bringing our history with us.
There's also this theme of impermanence. Characters are often in temporary situations, but sometimes the temporary becomes permanent in unexpected ways.
Or what they thought was permanent turns out to be temporary. The ground is always shifting beneath their feet.
Let's talk about Eisenberg's craft. Her prose style is very distinctive. How would you describe it?
It's deceptively simple. The sentences are usually clear and accessible, but they're doing incredibly complex emotional and psychological work.
She has this way of capturing thought patterns that feel completely natural, the way a mind actually moves from one idea to another.
And she's a master of indirect revelation. You gradually understand things about characters without being explicitly told. The information emerges organically.
Her dialogue is particularly strong. People talk the way people actually talk. They interrupt themselves. They assume shared knowledge. They avoid saying difficult things directly.
But it never feels naturalistic for its own sake. Every conversation serves the story's emotional purpose while still sounding completely authentic.
The point of view is usually close third person, which allows for this intimate access to characters' thoughts while maintaining some objective distance.
That distance is crucial because it prevents the stories from becoming too claustrophobic. We're close to the characters, but not trapped in their limitations.
Eisenberg also does interesting things with pacing. She'll spend a lot of time on something that seems minor, then move quickly through what might be a major event.
It reflects what actually feels important to the characters in the moment. An awkward social interaction might matter more than some external drama.
And she's excellent at creating atmosphere. You really feel the physical and emotional environment of these stories.
Whether it's the humidity of Central America or the artificial comfort of the artist colony, the setting is never just backdrop. It's integral to the character's experience.
Her descriptions are precise, but not overwrought. She finds the details that really matter, the ones that reveal something about character or mood.
And she's not afraid of ambiguity. These stories don't tie everything up in neat packages. They end when the emotional arc is complete, not when all questions are answered.
The structure of individual stories varies considerably. Some are more linear, others are quite fragmented or circular.
Each story finds the form that best serves its particular content. She's not imposing a formulaic structure. She's discovering what each story needs.
There's also this interesting use of repetition and variation. Phrases or images will recur, but with slightly different meanings.
It creates this musical quality. Ideas and images echo through the stories, building layers of meaning through repetition and variation.
Her use of humor is subtle, but important. These aren't comic stories, but there are moments of genuine humor that provide relief from the anxiety.
And the humor often comes from characters' attempts to maintain social norms in abnormal situations. There's something both funny and poignant about these efforts.
Let's talk about context. Where does this collection fit in Eisenberg's career and in contemporary literature?
This was her first collection in 13 years, and it shows both continuity with her earlier work and an evolution in response to our current moment.
She's been writing short stories for decades, always focusing on these themes of displacement and miscommunication, but this collection feels particularly urgent.
The political and economic upheavals of the 2000s and 2010s gave her subject matter a new relevance. The personal anxieties she's always written about have become more widely shared.
How was the collection received when it came out?
Very positively, by critics who appreciate literary fiction. It was long listed for the Penn Faulkner Award and widely reviewed in major publications.
But like a lot of literary short story collections, it probably didn't reach a huge commercial audience. These stories require patience and attention.
Which is unfortunate because they're incredibly rewarding for readers willing to engage with them. But they're not beach reads or airport novels.
Where do you place Eisenberg in the landscape of contemporary short story writers?
She's part of a tradition that includes Alice Munro, William Trevor, and Tobias Wolff, writers who find profound meaning in apparently ordinary moments.
But she has her own distinctive voice and concerns. Her focus on displacement and her particular kind of psychological realism are very much her own.
And she's influencing younger writers who are dealing with similar themes of economic and political instability. Her work feels very much of this moment.
The collection also fits into a broader tradition of American writers examining privilege and its discontents. There's something particularly American about these anxieties.
Yes. These are characters who expected certain things from life, based on their education and background, and they're discovering that those expectations may not be reliable.
It's also worth noting that Eisenberg writes theater as well as fiction. Does that background show up in her prose?
Absolutely. Her ear for dialogue and her ability to create dramatic tension through conversation definitely reflect her theatrical experience.
And there's often this sense that we're watching scenes unfold rather than just reading about them. The stories have a visual, performative quality.
But she uses the resources of fiction, internal access to character, flexible time, detailed description, in ways that are distinctly literary rather than theatrical.
As we wrap up, let's give our honest assessment. What works brilliantly in this collection?
The psychological realism is extraordinary. These characters feel completely authentic in their confusion and their attempts to navigate complex situations.
And the prose is beautiful without being showy. Eisenberg has complete control over her instrument. Every sentence serves the story's purpose.
The thematic coherence is also impressive. These stories speak to each other without being repetitive. They're variations on important themes.
What doesn't work as well?
Some readers might find the pace too slow or the resolutions too ambiguous. If you want clear answers and dramatic action, this isn't for you.
And the characters are drawn from a fairly narrow slice of society. Educated, middle-class Americans with the luxury of existential anxiety rather than immediate survival concerns.
Though I'd argue that Eisenberg is aware of that limitation and incorporates it into her critique of privilege and its blind spots.
Fair point. So who should read this collection?
Anyone interested in beautifully crafted literary fiction that takes contemporary anxieties seriously. Readers of Alice Munro, Jennifer Egan, or George Saunders would likely appreciate this work.
And what will readers take away from it?
Deeper understanding of how large historical forces affect individual lives, and perhaps some recognition of their own experiences of displacement and confusion.
These stories will stay with you. They capture something essential about what it feels like to live in our current moment of uncertainty.
And they do it with compassion and intelligence. Even when Eisenberg is critiquing her characters, she never dismisses them.
Michael Chen, thank you for this conversation about Your Duck is My Duck. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Sarah. I hope we've encouraged some listeners to discover Deborah Eisenberg's remarkable work.